Welcome to Scrappy ABM, your source for groundbreaking approaches that don't break the bank. ABM shouldn't cost $200K in tech to even get started. So if you want to get started with ABM or make your program even better without investing a massive amount of money, you're in the right place. Each week, we'll hear from the brightest minds in the marketing world who are redefining ABM, achieving incredible results with untraditional methods, limited resources, and a whole lot of creativity. This isn't a show about how much money you can spend on fancy tech or overhyped tools. Instead, it's about celebrating creative problem solving and the scrappiness it takes to get ABM right. We'll dive into how these marketing leaders built robust ABM strategies with limited resources, revealing the actionable insights that led to their biggest wins. So if you're a marketer ready to challenge the status quo and build a scalable, efficient, effective marketing strategy, Scrappy ABM is the show for you. So if you're ready to discover ABM strategies that are lean, impactful, and utterly transformative, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to Scrappy ABM, your actual podcast with practical playbooks that do not break the bank. This is your host, Mason Cosby, and today I am joined by my good friend, Chris Rack, and I'm really excited to dig in to the overall playbook that he's outlined. Let's go ahead and dive right in. As we think through this playbook, what are you calling this general playbook as you're working with clients?
So when I'm working with customers, we're just generally referring to it as a old school direct mail program, right? What we're finding right now, MRP works with both customers and have a marketing team for ourselves. And this playbook applies on both sides of it. But what we're seeing right now is a lot of email boxes are full, but the mailboxes are not, right? And in an effort to do something a little bit different, stand out from the noise and still remain cost effective and quote unquote scrappy, if you will. We've seen a lot of success with a kind of a turnkey direct mailer that's incentivized just a little bit to drive response rates.
Yeah, we're really calling this like the old school direct mail playbook with a modern twist is, I think, a way of thinking through it. So again, as we think about where does this really typically lie in a funnel? Like, is this pipeline generation? Is this an acceleration play or is this more of an expansion playbook?
Could be both. Right. So definitely pipeline generation is its core use case, identifying target ICP, sending them cold, if you will, right, mailer with the idea of getting them to engage into a meeting and or a demo or whatever the next step is that you're looking for on that side. But I see a lot of success as well in customer marketing and cross sell, upsell and or cold lead warm up from an acceleration standpoint. Right. I'm sure every marketer or B2B marketer has a couple thousand leads from 2023 that are sitting in their Marketo or email nurture, collecting dust, right? That might be closed, lost opportunities from last year or demo requests that never showed. Using a unique play like this is a great way to warm those up as well.
I love that call out. I think, especially as I'm talking with a lot of clients about building their ABM program, I generally start with closed, lost. Because you probably have the best data, you know why they said no, you can create specific content that overcomes that objection and you just re-engage based on the data you've got. So I love the call out around closed lost. As far as specific technology, like what is the tech that would be generally required to run some kind of a program like this?
It's really low tech. At MRP, like we offer the service turnkey. So if anybody out there was looking for it, it requires zero tech or commitment for you on your side. It's a service and we handle all the technology from our side. But there are vendors in the space. Really, all you need is a direct mail printer and a landing page. If you can create a landing page that has some sort of QR connector to it or some sort of identification code that you could connect mailer to identification code, you can execute just as simply as that.
Yeah. So, and I want to make sure I'm understanding this correctly because I'm actually speaking at an event next week. And I was like, I don't have the technology to even create a QR code. So like went and created a free account. I've got like 14 days until that QR code expires because I'm trying to be really scrappy myself. So as you're thinking through, you just mentioned landing page that has QR capabilities. Like how are you actually developing those QR codes in a way that is not going to be super expensive?
It depends on how you want to attack it, right? The QR code isn't a requirement, right? Or, you know, like I use a QR code in a PIN system on my side. So when the customer gets the direct mail and, you know, again, it looks like this, right? There we go. All they have to do is go to the QR code and then our landing page, right, populates and all of their information is pre-populated to improve the conversion on that side. That being said, if you don't have that tech or you don't want to invest in that, then you're just sending people to a landing page where they have to type in their information with their old fingers, right? But if they got there, that still happens and it'll still be a quality lead for you. So there's no requirement I just use that tech to improve conversion rates for myself and for customers on the back end.
Yeah. Very simply, some way to actually send direct mail. That's obviously a core piece. There's likely some level, this is not necessarily tech, but again, we're thinking through what's the design, how do we actually think through what are we pointing people to, and then a QR code or a very clearly and easily identifiable website address that people can actually go to from a landing page perspective and convert there. So direct mail and landing page, super simple.
In its simplest form, the tools you're using to execute a direct mail outside of the printer are really the same, could be the same that if you were sending an email to your database. You know, it's the same concept, right? You have an offer, you're driving a call to action, right? The only thing that's different in this instance is just the medium to which you're sending it.
I love it. So as we think about, we've already really touched on the content piece. It's really just a direct offer conversion. Now I'm curious, as we think through playbooks that you guys have run, is it always just a conversion-based landing page that's, hey, book this call, or what are the different offers you guys have developed for these kind of direct mail campaigns?
Yeah, so the standard flow, first up, we tend to incentivize all call to actions, if you will, right? And again, just a little incentive drives just that much more conversion. Just that much more conversion to drive significant pipeline. Our standard flow is offering up a $5 gift card for a survey, a quick survey engagement. We'll ask them 3 to 5 questions. Either us or the customer will come up with those questions. Like, we try to recommend questions that will provide value to your sales org, right? If they're answered, right? Not budget, timeline, bant, garbage, right? Those are nice, yeah. Right? But if I'm selling into someone who's a security vendor, right, I might ask them what attacks are they currently working on, or what very specific type questions that a sales rep could arm themselves with to write personalized prospecting content or things of that nature. The last question of the 5-question survey is just, would you like to speak to sales? If you would, we'll give you an additional incentive or a $50 gift card. You used the word acceleration earlier. What we're finding is that just that little offer, right, takes someone who likely might have been a demo 3 months from now and just gets them into your funnel faster. And I'm sure the first vendor into the funnel, right, is generally the one that gets picked 80% of the time, according to HubSpot or whoever smart company posted that recently.
Yep. I'm glad we dug into the specific content piece. You're framing this up as, hey, fill out the survey, not necessarily come to our website and book a call. And it's a very small incentive, but then also there is essentially it's the, for lack of a word, normally you would see like a main call to action be scheduled a call. And what is referred to in my book is the transitional call to action is something like a survey or a content offer. You've reversed those. So the main call to action is a survey. And then, oh, by the way, if after the survey and looking around a little bit, you're interested in actually booking a demo, we'll give you a $50 gift card. So you've 10x'd the value on that side. I think that's super smart.
And what we usually see is, and again, if we send 1,000 of these out, on average, we see about 2% of them turn into meetings or demos. And it's about split. About half of those meetings come from the survey engagement where sales follows up and turns them into a demo. And about half just raise their hand and say, sure, I'll take an incentivized call because you happened to ask me. So,
yeah. Okay. That's super helpful. As far as budget, we think about the overall investment in something like this. How much are you generally seeing from a budget perspective?
So, I mean, if my customers, 1,000 sends is about $25,000, right? So not huge, right? Not a small commitment, but not a huge one as well, right? But compared to a $75,000 ABM platform that takes 7 months to onboard and 26 people to connect into your systems, right? $25,000 is to drive an impactful pipeline result is actually a drop in the bucket. I'm able to do it at that price point because I have many customers, right? So my economies of scale with my printer are obviously a factor, right? So I have a lot of customers and I push that cost savings to customers because I have a lot of them at scale. But if you were to do this directly yourself, I don't think you could match the $25,000 per 1,000 cents price point, but you could probably get with 60% of the way there, given that you don't have the economies of scale.
Yeah. I was actually looking at this for a client in the past week, and I would just Google like a calculator, and the USPS actually has a direct mail postage calculator. That's if you're trying to send these things, this is an estimate. And I think you're correct. I think we were looking to send 1,000. I think it was was in the ballpark, but it was more. As you're thinking about this might be a viable option for you, there are publicly accessible calculators that they're not going to be perfect, but they're going to help you get a ballpark based on your number of sends and the thought process you've got there.
And add in your printing cost, that's going to be there too, right? Your printer's going to charge you for something, right? You're not, obviously, unless you're going really scrappy and laser printing these puppies out and putting them in the mailbox yourself, but it could happen, right? I've seen back in the day, and this is really old school. I used to take like postcards, right? I'd take funny memes and I'd have funny memes printed with VistaPrint. They would cost me like, I could get like 1,000 of them for 50 bucks. And I would just write, on the back of them, look forward to chatting. And I would mail them out old school postage for $1.50 each. And I used to get meetings like that all the time, just because it was, you know, different. It's a little bit more manual. Like I had to write on each one and all that. We're scrappy. That's what you have to be in this market.
Yeah, I love it. So we've already talked through budget. And we've really talked through the exact tactics of identify your list of people. I actually am curious on that front, just given the nature of remote work. How are you building out these lists for the direct mail sends?
So there's two things to look at from that first part of it, right? So obviously from a logistics perspective, we tend to find that 90% of workers now 2.5 years post-COVID are some form of hybrid, right? Okay. They're going to the office in some fashion, right? So using the standard office, right? The office location usually gets it to them eventually. We've also found that unlike gifting, postal mailers that are a little bit like this, again, there's not high cost to ship them, not a huge expense. So a lot of times we're seeing the corporate entities of companies forwarding mail to the employee, either at the sublocation or at their home if they have it on record. On average, we see about 90% delivery rate with who we send to in that. The other, wow, I guess you would say, secret sauce from a choosing your target audience standpoint is we have our own intent data at MRP, but we do leverage, and we have leveraged over the years, intent data to, again, try to make the haystack as small as possible, especially with an ABM program like that.
Historically, as I've looked at ABM and gift or direct mail, it has been largely gifting. But you're totally right. Just in the grand scheme of things, if you have a 90% delivery rate because there's so many people that are hybrid, that might just be the same thing as like the equivalent to an email that bounces. It's just part of your conversion metrics. And then the other thing is just, even in the context of it's a piece of mail, even if they don't forward it, somebody can just take a picture of it and just text it or email it. And I think
one interesting nugget as well is that we put ours in an envelope. So it's a 9.5 by 12 envelope, white envelope. It looks, to be candid with you, it looks very legal. Right. So I don't know if you've ever gotten legal documents served to you, but that's what it looks like. Right. So our open rates in that envelope are really high. So it actually gets that tactical engagement with the direct mail versus a stack of stuff that you might scroll through. And the other thing we see, interestingly enough, is we see a high volume of responses from higher levels at the company, VP and even C-level. Because what we found is that generally those folks get mail handed to them, or it's put on their desk. The C-level folks, the CFO, the CEO, the VP of finance, head of sales, head of marketing, they don't get mail, but generally it's delivered to them. And it's usually delivered somewhat promptly. So that given, and then the envelope part of it that gets the tactical engagement drive, a lot of our conversion rate is with customers who are looking to reach higher level decision makers. And also higher level decision makers are just, they tend to be more open to different tactics because, to be candid, we're blasted with so many calls and emails that sometimes it's just nice to be like, oh, this is interesting. This is new. I'll engage with these people because they did something different, you know, like.
Yeah, it's a good call out. The only thing I'm curious on, and this is, again, personal experience as like a consumer, I've got this Wi-Fi company that will send me a piece of mail that looks like a check that I've received, and I open it. And then it's a special offer that's limited time. And so I am curious, are you seeing a greater success rate with the envelope? And there's obviously the opening of the envelope component. So you can almost guarantee the view, but is there any consideration around, or I guess let me reframe the question of just, have you seen any negative responses to, I thought this was something else, and then I ended up getting a marketing piece of material?
No, I mean, nothing that's come up that I've heard from customers on our side and or customers. I can tell you, we've had customers not send in envelopes, and the performance is better with the envelope from a conversion standpoint. Is it like double better? No, it's a couple of points better. But I haven't heard the whole, it's almost like calling someone with a block number or a local dialer. Like if somebody calls me with a local dialer, I'm annoyed for a second, but then if it's a good call, it's a good call and it's still fine. Similarly, if you might be a smidge annoyed opening up a mailer and being like, oh, this is marketing. But then if there's something on the marketing that catches your attention, you get over that quick discomfort quickly.
Yeah, that's a great way to think about it. Okay. Any unexpected roadblocks or any challenges as people are implementing this kind of a playbook?
Really, really figuring out who you want to send it to. An email blast is quick, easy. There's some design time that goes into it. There's a little, the printers are going to ask you questions, and some of the finding a printer, right? You're trying to decipher between the shop that prints the baseball jerseys for the local team versus the shop that can handle printing quality marketing printing at scale. So there's a little bit of that. I will again highlight that there are vendors out there who do this as a service that can take a lot of that guesswork out of you. And then also, yeah, there's time, like the time component of the mailer execution and all of that as well.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think those are great call outs. And it's a great example. This hat was made by somebody at an Etsy shop. It's a 1-of-1. Mm-hmm. I've actually had a lot of people that are like, this is awesome. Like, I have people that want to buy this kind of hat. And I'm like, I don't know how to get the volume from this kind of a hat. And as I've started to make other pieces of swag or marketing collateral, like I don't know how to get volume. And also it takes time because this was hand embroidered. Like you can't get scale with that.
Yes, especially the swag. You don't even start getting any sort of economy of scale until 100. And some vendors won't even work with you until you're 500, right? So that's what's hard with gifting too, like full on gifting as well, right? Because it's so like this can, I'll do 500 send runs with some customers across different types of offers. So you can be a little bit more flexible with your messaging and things of that nature.
Awesome. All right. As far as results, obviously this is your bread and butter. So I'm sure you have clients in which the results are 10x that of other clients just based on current situations and overall their level of involvement. But I am curious generally as there's a benchmarking level, what are some of the results that you've been able to accomplish?
On average, like as I mentioned earlier, we're seeing about 2% of total sends turn into a meeting. And half of those come from the survey engagement and a sales or marketing follow-up on those survey questions to request a meeting. And half of those come from like a hand raiser from the actual mailing offering that says, I'll take a meeting, right, on that flow. So most of our customers have an average contract size of a minimum of 25K. That's usually a solid benchmark. So for those, if you do the math on meetings to opportunity conversion rates, most of the time a 25K investment, which we spoke earlier, is seeing on average between 200 and 250K of pipeline. Again, if your ACV is larger than that, that pipeline number could go up. If your ACV is a bit smaller than that, that return on investment could go down a bit. But usually that's the variable that impacts pipeline or return on investment the most.
Yeah. I love the simplicity of just if you send 1,000, you should expect about a 2% conversion rate into some kind of a conversation. And then again, from there, if your conversion metrics hold, you should be able to know based on the pipeline volume that's generated, how that actually converts into revenue.
You're likely going to see, to your point about a conversation, you're likely going to see about 10% of the people take the survey. So you send 1,000, you're getting 100 responses of people engaging with that survey. The 1% comes from that 10% where sales or marketing follows up with those responses and says, hey, based on your responses, let's have a meeting. And they turn into a meeting. That's just your short pipe. We see over 6, 12, 9 months leading forward a consistent flow of pipeline because it's, you know, some people, you'd be surprised how many people take the direct mail and be like, I don't need this right now, but I'll put it over here in my folder or something. And then once it pops up, they actually grab the direct mail. And we see customers convert 6 months after we sent the mailer because it just happened to be in their folder on their desk of things they wanted to do when they had a campaign or a budget or a time.
Amazing. Okay. Final question. Like any other pieces of advice you'd give around starting ABM? Like, we just walked through a very practical campaign that's very one to many in its nature as a starting point for how do you engage 1,000 accounts. And obviously you can stack more on top of it around, again, geo-specific targeting with ads, or you can do email follow. Like, there's a lot more that you can do with it, but as a simple campaign, like, we got a solid one. But where would you also give some advice just on starting ABM in general?
It's a really great topic. I did a talk years ago at B2B MX on what ABM isn't. And I think I love your scrappy ABM concept. It's just because it's like ABM can be an Excel spreadsheet and an Excel spreadsheet and calling people, right? And ABM could be sales and marketing working together to send people a social message, call them and email them at the same time. It's really just an integrated approach to a very targeted group of contacts or accounts, right? So I guess my feedback is just don't overcomplicate it, right? Your first step in ABM doesn't have to be Google ABM software vendor, right? It doesn't have to plug into your CRM. It doesn't require a 6-month onboarding. The only folks who want you to believe that are those selling 7-figure softwares and platforms. Funny, what you're seeing now is, to be candid, you're seeing not a pivot away from ABM, right? Because with a downturn in economy, a lot of customers are saying, do you really need this platform to do this ABM stuff? The CFOs are asking those questions and the actual buyers are saying, yeah, maybe we don't, right? So now you're seeing, and if you pay attention, a lot of the ABM platforms are now becoming go-to-market platforms. Because they're trying to disassociate themselves with the ABM connotation because of that reason. Again, ABM is really just the simple act of identifying a really tight group of accounts or people at those accounts that you know have the highest propensity to spend with you and figuring out how to laser focus on them with creativity to stand out from the noise.
Obviously, I couldn't agree more on the just start simple. Chris, thank you so much for taking the time today. If you want to find out more about you, where can they find you?
I'm on LinkedIn, Christopher Rack. MRP is on LinkedIn as well. Two great places to reach us. You can check us out at www.mrpfd.com as well. Our direct mail solution is called MRP Direct, right? So there's a page on the webpage where you can check it out. You can DM me as well if you're looking for simple, quick, and efficient execution on a direct mail solution like we were just talking about as well. Mason, appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, thank you so much. This has been Scrappy ABM. We hope you all enjoyed. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Scrappy ABM. If you enjoyed this week's episode, go ahead and give us a follow so that you don't miss a single episode. We drop every single Monday so that you can start your week off right. And if you're looking for additional great content just like this, go check out scrappyabm.com. We're building a library of frameworks, guides, templates, processes, and tools so you have everything that you need to build a low-budget, high-impact, scrappy program. Again, thank you for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. This has been your host, Mason Cosby, and we look forward to seeing you in the next one.